irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another wonderful evening of broadcasting right here on LA Talk Radio. It's your golden gate to the stars. Woo-hoo. How do you like that, Rich? Pretty good, huh? I sit here looking at my friend and business partner, Mr. Richard Polinelli, out there in Fruta, Colorado. Hey, Richard.
Hey, yeah, out here in dinosaur land, freezing as usual because, you know, it just gets cold once the sun goes down here. But, you know, is it just me or did Rick just keep playing on and on there?
He did. For those who don't know and haven't been listening, that is a piece of music called Buffalo Grass, written by a friend of mine named Rick Gilman. And he donated it graciously to be the show opening music. So we appreciate that, Rick. And I know you're listening because you like hearing your name mentioned on the air. So Rick, go, man. Okay. We're not going to muster on tonight. Although I will say, we put up pre-orders today for Mr. Declan Finn's three new books, White Ops, the three White Ops books, and we have already 22 pre-order on the ebooks so far, and that's only been a day. So keep going, guys. The first one is out January 18th, the second February 15th, and the third March 15th. Great stories. So Richard and I did the editing and the formatting on them, and they are stories. They are definitely stories. If you like the stuff, outer space adventures, this is your cup of tea. So we're not going to mess around too much longer. We're going to bring in our guest because he is a returning guest from September of last year. We talked about his first book, Gray, not his first book, but the one in a series, with the Firebrand series, I believe it is. And now we're going to book number two. So please welcome back with our flourish, Mr. David Cadlehake. Hello, David.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for having me back. This is a great time, as always. I've been looking forward to this.
But Gray was such a good story, and you created such a universe in that book. And as we were talking before the show, thank God you didn't have to go back and recreate that.
Let me tell you, it's a real blessing to be able to jump right into the second book and not have to come up with all the parameters and what works, what doesn't work, what I can do, what I can't do the first time.
Absolutely.
You just get to laze your way right in and do it the second time. It's great.
Absolutely. I'm going to let David give you a little bit of the history of this book, but I do want to mention the protagonist, the female protagonist. Her name is Scout. Yeah, and her best friend and body double Chuck.
Yeah,
happens to be a big Bowie knife. I'm going to let David tell you about it because they're not grays; they're still human.
So, they are places like Amazon and whatnot to see how the thing's selling, if you're getting reviews, if it's getting rated, all that kind of fun stuff. So I was on there the other day, and it was ranked number one new release in teen and young adult zombie fiction. Now,
not a zombie book.
I have to say, it's not really a zombie book, but I will take that for the win. Now, when you get a category like that, you can actually keep going if you wanted to, like left-handed barbers who only, you know, shave at night. You know, you can keep whittling down the category until there's only one book that fits, but there are quite a few in here. So I was actually really heartened by that to see that it was number one for at least a couple days. So that was good. Sure. I was very happy about that. But Grays, I'm going to say right here, Grays are not zombies.
No, they're not.
They're not. They act kind of like that. Now, I don't know if we talked about this a year ago, and for anybody that, if I'm repeating myself, I apologize, but the whole thing that came up with Grays was a relative of mine, their father-in-law, who'd been very hearty and hale his entire life, up into his 90s, and physically he was still perfectly fit, but mentally he went downhill very quickly over the course of 6 months. You know, it just went very fast. It's kind of what gave me the idea for Grays, because when you get to be about 18 or 20 years old in this universe, all of a sudden you go gray and you basically revert, lose your mind, go all the way back to, you know, no more intelligence than a two-year-old, I think I say it here. Sometimes a border collie, it depends where I'm going. But you still are physically very fit and hale, and that causes problems because your instinct for survival kicks in and you do whatever you can, but you, as a gray, you don't know, you just don't know how to do it. And the world itself is a pretty messed up universe, and flooding and natural disasters, and it gets pretty crazy there in Black the second half, wouldn't you say, Jim?
Absolutely. The Grays remind, it's almost like they're trying to revert back to Neanderthal, but they're not quite going that far. Their language is a guttural, if they can even get that out.
Yeah.
Like Scout says, her golden retriever was smarter than the Grays.
Absolutely. And normally I would have my golden retriever Ted in here with me as a model for that, because that's about how intelligent he is. But you know, that's about what it is. And this is a young adult novel. Now, Jim, you're young. Richard, you're young. So.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome.
Somebody needs to go see the eye doctor tomorrow, but we'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm taking it.
I am young. I'm younger than my dad was.
Well, my daughter is a teacher, seventh grade teacher, and she had me to do a virtual author's day last school year. And I had a great time. You know, there were, I don't know, a couple of hundred kids that were in there for the whole school. And she actually just the other day got this email from one of those students. Now, he's not a student now. He's moved up. But I think he's probably in eighth grade now. And it just simply said, "Hello, good evening. I wanted to let you know I have successfully read your father's book, Gray. And it was my first taste of reading that made me enjoy reading. I wanted to thank you and your father for making such a wonderful book." And I thought it still gives me goosebumps just to think about it, because that's really what this is all about. It's
absolutely
getting some kids like this to read.
Absolutely.
And then kind of flash forward to my mom. She's in a retirement home and she's 88 and her friends are in their 90s and they are pestering her all the time for the books. They don't know how much longer they're going to be around. So I really have to get busy on the third one now, too, I guess.
Well, there you go. Now, there's only going to be three, right?
There's only going to be three.
Okay.
Yep. The next book is White, and I find out that when you sign on with the publisher, they really mean it when they give you deadlines.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Which is why we're here right now, because this just came out like a week and a half ago.
Right.
And so they're serious. So I'm going to have to finish White within the next year and get that out, and that'll be – that'll be the end of it.
Yeah. Now, Richard and I don't usually give deadlines. However, I think we're going to start, because trying to get authors to work on books, holy crap, it's like bowling teeth.
We don't always take direction well.
We're all writers. Every single one of us in this room right now, we're all writers.
Yep.
So we know what it's like to work on a deadline, but then we don't because we don't give them.
But it was what, 11 books, 194 stories by 90 different authors.
Richard was so good at this.
You'd had my hairline when it was all over, Richard. I can't believe you didn't do that.
he threw the books at me and he goes, here, I got to corral these guys because they're all over the board. So I said, okay. So I finally, I wrote it where I talked to him when we have a meeting every Thursday on Skype. And I said, okay, now you need to talk to these authors and tell them they got to keep these short stories under 200 pages.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes a book within a book.
Yeah. Well, we have one author who does not, it's John C. Wright, and he does not write short.
No.
You know, he makes War and Peace look like, you know, a little short story you read when you're in kindergarten, which is, and it's not a complaint because he's a great writer, but oh my God, as the editor and whatnot, you're just like, how am I going to get this done? But
right.
But if I can, there's something on Black as I was reading it because I had not read Gray.
Right.
And I actually did this in reverse. I read Black, got to the end, went, I got to go read Gray now. But it put me in the mind of an old Star Trek episode called Miri.
Oh, yeah.
Where they come to the planet and they find the kids who the whole planet has been wiped out by a disease.
Yep.
The only people living are these kids. And when you hit a certain age,
you're grump.
You go.
You're a grump.
And I was kind of instantly reminded of that. This is what Miri would have looked like if it had happened here, except for I don't know what triggers this turning people into grays yet, and I'm hoping next book.
We don't either. well
there are three of us in this room, and of the three of us, I'm pretty sure that none of us really know how that happened.
Okay, so, I was curious.
Now, which brings me up to a point, I needed to ask you this, David, because it's intrigued me. Now, the grays pretty much speak in a guttural. They can't form words.
Correct.
However, Hunter talks like he's took psychology at UCLA. So my thing is, wait a minute, I'm not done yet. Now, the thing is, I told Richard this. My theory is that Hunter hasn't totally turned. Either that or he's on his way back to being human.
So if you think back to Gray, and this is all going to come clear, by the way, in White, in the third book, how this.
Of course, you will visit us on, right?
Yeah, this is all going to come. This is all going to be. This too shall become clear when White comes out. But if you look at Scout, she's half gray. Hunter is basically half gray.
Right.
I'm not going to say who else is in this because that'll. I don't want to give away any surprises near the end of Black. But you know they're half, and they're still going that direction slowly. You'll notice, like Gray. Scout talks about her hair still changing more more. She says, you know, to me, it doesn't look any different, but to somebody that hadn't seen me for some time, they'd be shocked at my appearance, you know, something along those lines. So she's still changing as we go. But then you throw in the little things like Ted, the older guy in the mound. And by the way, that mound is a real place, by the way. That's not made up. Yeah, that's a real place. It's difficult. It's a very huge man-made cavern complex on top of a very big hill in Miamisburg, Ohio, where they used to work on parts for the Manhattan Project.
Okay.
And my good friend of mine is a corporate real estate agent, and he was selling it on behalf of somebody, and I got to tour it first. So it doesn't look that nice inside as it does in the book, but it is a real place.
Huh.
So you find even, you got like Ted. Ted hasn't turned at all. You know, he's in his 50s and he hasn't changed at all yet. So there's a couple little things that's all going to kind of come together in White. And I hope, I don't want it to be like Lost where you just kind of go in the end, well, what the hell just happened here? And it's what do you mean it's over? I want it to come to a pretty satisfying conclusion in 80,000 words or less.
Okay, well, I don't want to give away any spoiler alerts because the end of the book was phenomenal. But I will say that you definitely left the door open.
I tend to do that. You know,
and funny, the sky. You left the sky open.
I love that. I was waiting for that the entire book. I was waiting to write those pages the entire book. I couldn't wait to get there. I mean, I still have my regular job, you know, 9 to 5. And I go out and I will write in the evenings in the summer on the front porch or something. And everybody walks by, waves at me. They have no idea what I'm doing. They think I'm surfing porn or something. I have no idea. But
well, you probably
here
are.
I am. Well, just a couple of windows open. It's nothing big. And so, you know, I was banging this thing out as fast as I could, you know, 1,000, 2,000 words a night or whatever. And I was just dying to get to the last 20 pages. The last 20, you know, really kind of opens things up. And I just had a great time writing this. I really did. It's very liberating, like you said in the very beginning, to be able to jump into this without having to recreate the whole world. And Richard, right. I can't understand how you made it through Black without reading Gray first. Kudos. Here.
Well, yeah, I got Black first, and I went, I'm going to read it because, you know, we want to talk about it this week.
Right.
And I went through real quick, so I just jumped to Gray. And I think, speaking of jumping,
we are... And you are listening to LA Talk Radio. Don't go away, Dave, because we're going to be right back to you. But you are listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be right back after this brief word from LA Talk Radio. You ever listen to a radio talk show and think to yourself, I could do that, or I could do that better? Well, now's your opportunity. See, LA Talk Radio has slots available Monday through Sunday, and they're all day. We're looking for hosts to fill those slots. So if you have an idea that you think translate to a radio talk show, go to latalkradio.com, find the link that says Become a Host, click on that link, and before you know it, you will be the host of your very own talk show right here on LA Talk Radio. And you'll be joining the hundreds of hosts that have got their start in radio right here at LA Talk Radio. So you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Remember, that's latalkradio.com, how to become a host. Sam Hassan will be happy to walk you through it. And you're going to be proud of what you can do as a host of your very own radio show, LA Talk Radio. And we are back with our guest, David Kettlehake, and we're talking about his newest book in the gray world, I guess would be the best way of putting it.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but it's called Black, and it's available on Amazon and all the online booksellers, and you cannot go wrong.
Thank you.
This is a YA book, but believe me, adults, it doesn't read like a YA book. It's a really, really great read. And if you want to call and talk to David here in the studio, the number is 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. And Richard, you had your finger up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just kind of going back to what we were talking about before we hit the break was I had read this in reverse, which normally I won't do, but just the way things went. So the way you wrote Black, it stands alone by itself. You could read it without reading Gray, but it helps to know what happened in Gray. But the thing that struck me in this was the world that you built after everything floods and after everything goes bad. You have these kids who somehow create these little different economies. And that's what really struck me with Google, what he set up at that at the mountain. I'm forgetting the name.
Rumpke Mountain.
So you have that they are able to adjust to what happened and create this economy where they, you know, they're not eating high off the hog, but they're at least surviving. Right. And that, how did you come up with that? That's
Well, great question. Rumpke Mountain is also a real thing in Dayton. It is the place. It is a huge hill, massive, where it's a landfill, and they just make it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I needed, because it's young adult, they can't act like adults. They can mirror adult behavior, but they can't act like adults. So whenever I have to have Scout have a thought that a young adult wouldn't have, she has to couch it in, my mom used to say this, or this is something my dad used to do, or something along those lines.
Right.
But you had to have somebody in here that's really smart. And so that's why I came up with Google. And he's just this brilliant little weirdo little kid who's way smarter than he should be, but you have to have somebody like that to help out, I think, a little bit. So in each of these, if you look at Gray, you had Church Island,
right,
which was their own little ecosystem, economy, whatever you want to call it. It was their own little enclave. And you had to have, because before they got to Church Island and Gray, they were in a really bad time. They had lost a member. It was miserable. They had no food. They had no fire. And you have to give the reader and the characters a chance to catch their breath. All right. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what it didn't turn out that way for them in the end. But that's what Rumkey Mountain was as well. It was this little bastion of somewhat civilization. And I could see they're only there because it's tall and out of the water. And how would they survive this? And they worked up that barter system where they go on raids and they get to keep half, and you know, things they dig up, they can trade for more stuff. It just was the only thing that they could do because you can't grow anything. There's nothing left,
right?
You know, you can't hunt anything. There's nothing left to hunt. The Greys have eaten everything. So you had to have these little economies. And I've got in White in the third and final book, and just to say, White is the third and final book in this, but the universe is so much fun. There could be all kinds of other things that, you know, other stories that happen elsewhere with other characters and whatnot. It could happen. Come been thinking about that. But there are going to be a few other little enclaves, for lack of a better term, in White as well, because you have to. It can't just be total running, battle, fighting, survival all the time. You have to give the reader and the characters just a chance to sit down and have a little bit of normalcy. So that was kind of the point of those, and the economies of them came kind of second afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, here they are. Well, what the hell are they going to do now? Oh, well, they can do this. So that was how that was. But yeah, it was fun to create, and I had a great time doing it. Like I said, White got a few things going up here.
There you go. Well, you know, it's interesting the way you age these kids, because you don't go in years.
Correct.
They are months old.
They are
like the Lord is 210 months.
Correct.
And I finally, you know, figured this out in my little fried brain how old that is. You know.
Oh, I have to do math. Trust me. There's a calculator.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Well, and they say they count. That's why when they meet Ted, the one older guy who doesn't seem to have succumbed to going gray, he kind of asks, why do you do that in months? And they said, well, it's more accurate, number one, than saying, well, I'm 16, because 16 doesn't cut it, because you could go anytime in 16. Plus, it makes them time maybe in their own minds feel like it's stretched out a little bit more.
Right.
So instead of 16 years, they can say, you know, 180 months or whatever it is. So
right.
And I was thinking
as you were going along in the black and you were talking about their age in months, I said, well, maybe that's months from the devastating storm and floods.
Yeah.
As they're all reborn new again.
It's
but
simply
it wasn't, but
it's simply their birthday and their
right
as far as they've been able to keep track how old they actually are.
Right.
So is it actual calendar months as we know it, or is it by the moon?
It's actual calendar months as we know it, well as they can keep as well as they can track it. They're gonna be a little off, you know.
Well, sure,
I mean, but they're gonna be pretty close.
I can see Richard's wheels moving. I can see the wheels in his head going around and around and around.
If my wheels went too fast, you would smell the smoke. So, can I take a second, read just a page?
Absolutely.
Sure, please. Yes.
I would love to. And actually, this is just the same thing I did for Gray. I'm going to read just the opening page because I like this. I had this. I wrote this, and then it's one of those where I read it back to my daughter, and she just she just loved it. And I knew I was on the right path then when I read it to my daughter. Chapter one, my name is Scout and I'm a killer. Over the past 12 months, I've killed 238 times. Not 237, not 239. I know the exact number, and when I lie down at night and close my eyes, I can recount the horrible details of every single one. Remembering in such clarity amazes me, because before the storm, and that's storm with a capital S, I had to be reminded to complete even the most mundane tasks. You know, simple stuff like packing my lunch for school or not flushing the toilet when someone was taking a shower. Perhaps the difference is killing is such a primal, basic thing. Maybe because the taking of life, even the life of something as monstrous as a gray, is fundamentally against my nature and so contrary to the person I thought I was. Whatever the reason, I've become a killer, and it gives me no pride in saying so, but I'm very good at it.
Yes, she is.
Dun, dun, dun. Here you can make
yes, she is. And she goes into slow motion mode.
She does.
Yes.
And that's one of the fun little things that I kind of came up with. And she goes into the slow-mo, which really allows her to take out enemies, other, you know, grays pretty much at will without right. a lot of threat to her, because there's a lot more of them than there are of her.
Sure.
But there are two types of grays. There's regular grays and then there's fast grays.
Right.
And fast grays are just as fast and can work in slow-mo just like she can. And they're all extremely, extremely strong.
Right.
And so if she comes up against a patch of regular grays, it's not too much trouble for her. But if she comes up against a fast gray, that always gives her quite a bit of problem. And typically, we were laughing earlier, typically at this point, she'll lose Chuck the knife, or he'll bounce out of her hands, or he'll be stuck right. in the back of some awful gray, and she scolds him. For
right.
for ditching her,
like yeah, I have to talk to that boy.
Yeah, she talks to Chuck all the time.
You know, the thing with the grays too. I mean, you mentioned there's the regular grays and the fast grays, but there are some aspects to the grays that we're finding out. You know, they're not just the mindless zombies. That's why you say it's not a zombie book.
They're not a zombie. They're not.
Susan is a character I'm kind of curious about.
I like her too.
Are we gonna see more of Susan?
So chapter one of White, I've actually only finished two chapters of White, the third book.
Okay.
Chapter one of White, Susan's back.
All right. All I need to know.
I'll give you that much.
That's all I need to know.
Yes. And this is not, and I stress this with gray. And I'm going to stress this again with black and white. There is no government enclave that's going to save them. There is no group of scientists
right.
that is... Mm-hmm. You're working diligently on a cure. There's no Duemakin, or however you pronounce that in Greek.
It's not like Resident Evil, right?
It's not. You're not okay. going to have this, you know, omnipotent being come down and save them. This is them. This is all them.
Okay.
And, you know, it says... if she dies, meaning Scout, our world dies with her. She's got a lot on her shoulders. And it's nobody else is going to come
right
save
right.
them. I'm not doing that. I had no intention of ever doing that. I always think that's just kind of a kind of way out.
Well, it's kind of a cheesy way to get out of it.
Right.
I'm glad to know, because you kind of made it real clear in about the middle of Black that there was no government agency. There was nothing that was going to come save them.
No, because they all went. They all got old, and they all went gray, and they all died.
Right. Yeah.
So there's nobody left. Nobody older than 20. Well, except maybe we found Ted, but for the most part, nobody older than 20 is left on the planet. So there's no.
And everybody who's left, their main concern is surviving through the next day. So they're not going to sit there and work on cures and try to figure out. Yeah.
Without giving anything away, however, there is a light at the end of this gray tunnel.
Yes, that's very good.
Nicely played. Nicely played.
I'm making a note of that right here. I like
it's free. I'll give it to you.
Okay, thanks. Perfect. So yeah, there is a light at the end of the gray tunnel, and White will hopefully clear all that up. And I am going to say, it was really, I don't know as writers, you guys would have this. When I wrote my very first book, published it in 2012, it's a thriller mystery, normal James Patterson type. It's actually modeled more after Dick Francis, the British writer, mystery writer. When I finished that, there was no Google Cloud, which is where I save all my works now. Every time I make any changes, I save it up to Google Drive. Back then, it was on a flash drive. So when I finished it, I had it on a flash drive, and I finished it in Cleveland, and I lived at the time down near Cincinnati, you know, 3.5 hours away. And I was terrified that I was going to get into an accident or something on the way back home, and nobody was ever going to see the book because it was going to be in this little flash drive and it was going to get destroyed and everything, and it was just going to be gone. So, you know, when I get to the end of a book, I kind of go, holy crap, I'm done. What just happened here? And I put, like, you know, 3-pound signs at the bottom, kind of that old journalist's note to signify, right, you know, finished. And I look at it and I ship it off to my publisher, and then I go, another crap. Well, crap, then I got to start another one. Mm-hmm. And I was so intent on getting Black done, I really hadn't given, it's not, I'm not going to tell you, I am, you know, you've got the plotters and you got the pantsers when you talk about the writer, you know, I am kind of this little combination here where I've got a lot of this in my head and I know where I'm going with it, but I don't have everything worked out on cue cards on walls behind me or anything. I just don't do that. The characters still kind of take things away and do stuff on me once in a while. So when I finished Black, I sat there. I went, oh crap, now what? I couldn't write anything for about a month. I had to really kind of think about where I wanted to go next. Right. So I never had, when I started Gray, I never had the very end of White completely figured out in my head yet. So hopefully you won't notice that when you read White a year from now.
Yeah. Well, keep that thought. Don't go away. We're going to have to break for another commercial, but we'll be right back with you. You're listening to LA Talk Radio's very own Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and we will be right back after a brief word from Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books.
It was a dark and stormy night when she walked into my office. She had a manuscript. Didn't know what to do with it. She finished, typed the end and all. But there was so much more she had to do. So I told her about my friends over at Tuscany Bay Books. They do all the editing, the formatting, they put a book cover on it, get the marketing done, they even have a publicist. Can't beat that in this town. So I sent her on her way to TuscanyBayBooks.com. Maybe that's where you should go too. As for me, I'm just going to sit here in my office and watch it rain. Would you believe I did that on one take with no rehearsal and no script?
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah, it came out that way. I went, good, fine.
I love it. I'm just going to sit in my office and watch it rain.
Yeah.
That's what David's been doing all day.
I've been doing that all day here.
Yeah. There you go. Well, we're back. We're back with our guest, Mr. David Kettlehake, and we're talking about his new book, Black, as opposed to Gray, which is going to be opposed to White. It will be but Black is now in your bookstores at Amazon and is all in the online booksellers. And if you haven't heard of it or haven't picked up a copy or haven't wanted a desire to read it, oh, you gotta. It's a great read. It's a great story. But read Gray first and then go to Black.
Now, Jim, we talked briefly just before we started, just when we got on. You were saying that you liked Gray a lot. And
I did.
And it was like, and I'm always very concerned that the next book in a series like this, you know, you said the sequel's tough. It's hard to write a sequel. The third one I'm hoping is going to be smooth sailing. But you know, I'm glad you liked it because.
Absolutely. And I'm sure I'm going to like White as well. So.
Well, I don't know if this will help you or not, but I actually liked Black more than I like Gray. So.
There we go. Excellent. Thank you.
See, that's even better yet.
That's even better yet.
There you go. Now I have a question for you, David.
Yes.
When you're writing your dialogue, and there is an awful lot of dialogue in this book, it's dialogue driven for sure. Mm-hmm. And your character's dialogue is precise and it's right on the money. My question is, do you read it back out loud to yourself to make sure the context and everything is flowing correctly?
And the quick and fast answer is you betcha. Because I know that, you know, we've all read books where the dialogue is maybe stilted or just doesn't sound natural. And you just, right. you just lose it. You just don't, you know, you lose the flow and you go, wait a minute. He's not going to say extrapolate right there, you know, or whatever. And so I will, when I sit down, editing's easy. Creating is hard. So I like to start off kind of like doing stretches before you go for a run. I like to do editing first. So I'll go back and edit and I will read the stuff out loud. Again, people walking by on the front porch going, what is he doing? So, but I will read it out loud. And then what's really important is I always have my daughter look it over too, because she's going to go something like, dad, no, you know, and whereas it may have flowed just fine, but she's got, you know, a 16-year-old is not going to say that. Right. So I have a sounding board for that as well. So I've always liked because it's first person present tense, Scout talks all the time. I mean, she's talking in her head all the time.
Exactly.
You really get to see what's going on, you know, in her head all the time. And I'm very stuck on making sure that perspective never changes to anybody else. It's Scout. That's how it is throughout the entire thing. It's not a shift perspective or anybody else. So, you know, but I do like having realistic, real dialogue in here. And I'm glad too. You like it. That's
me too.
That's good.
Also, one thing we're in the middle of working on a book for a brand new writer. I'm a brand new writer, and it's gone back and forth now between him and I for, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get it through his head, and he's finally kind of picking up on it, is that match your dialogue to your character. Don't – if your guy's from England, he's not going to be walking around saying y'all.
Yeah.
not. Yeah, exactly.
Wanker, maybe,
you know,
but
or Louisiana. No.
Yeah.
If you're from Louisiana, you're probably going to say Louisiana.
Yeah.
But you're not going to say y'all if you're from England. So match your dialogue to your character.
Correct. And Hunter has a Southern accent, and I talk about that. I mean, he throws a few y'alls in there, but I don't go crazy on phonetically spelling his Southern accents. Mm-hmm. It's too hard. Again, it's distracting. I mean, if I were to have somebody with an Italian heritage on there, if I tried that, it would make them sound like Luigi or Mario or something. It's just not going to work. And so, you know, I will say that, you know, he has a Southern accent, you know, and Hunter, they always talk about, it doesn't make sense because he's from like up Northern Ohio, but he's got this, and he'll throw in a y'all or whatnot, and they'll talk about it, but he's not going to actually speak in it.
Yeah. Now, you have 2 people here with Italian heritage. So anyway, Richard and I talk about this a lot. In fact, when we did our audiobook, I don't know how many guys we went through that he and I wrote a book together, The Last Lonely Trail. Mm-hmm. And did an audio book on it. And the guys, the people that were trying to do auditions for it, kept wanting to throw in Southern accents. And we said, no, read the dialogue the way the dialogue is written. The accents are in it.
Mm-hmm.
Just read it that way.
Yeah. I think most of them were trying for Yosemite Sam coming off of an overdose or something. It was just like, oh, my God.
Pile, you know.
Yeah, audio books, that would be really hard to do. That would be very, very challenging. So I give great kudos to everybody that all the voice talent that can do these audio books.
It turned out pretty good, but it took a while.
I do the editing. So when they're done, they send me the file. And I have this problem where it freaks me out to hear somebody reading my book that I've written.
Right.
I can't handle it. So, but then I've got to sit down. I've got to listen to the whole book because I got to make sure they're doing everything right. It's just, Yeah, I'm not a big fan of editing the audiobooks, but I love them because I know a lot of people are out there where they're driving long distance, and these are great to have. Right. But yeah, for me, it's just, ugh.
Well, I would love to have Gray and Black, well, the whole Firebrand trilogy when it's done, put into audiobook. Okay, really, I want it to be a Netflix movie, but that's just me.
Well, I'll do that.
You know. We all do that. But that's, you know, that's always the thought in the back of the mind. But, you know, somebody in Columbus, Ohio, your chances of picking up on a Netflix movie are probably a little slim. But yeah, that's incredibly difficult. And to have somebody else read your stuff would be really weird.
It is.
Yeah. We had a guest on here. She's been on two or three times now. Her name is Paris Afton Bond. She's a New York Times bestselling writer. She writes Western romance.
Nice.
Great stories. She's a great writer and everything else. And I sent her a copy of Jonah Blue, which is a story I wrote about a mountain man. It actually starts when he's 10 years old and it goes until he's 30. I don't know what is 33, 34.
Yeah, I think that was.
Three sections. From a young man and a mountain man, and then they become scouts for the explorer, and then they buy a ranch in Montana or build a ranch in Montana. Okay. And but she writes me back and she goes, "Oh my God!" She goes, "I believe this so much. I even looked up to see if Jonah Blue was real."
There you go.
See, that's perfect. That's exactly what you want.
Forward for it.
Yeah,
but I had the only comments I ever had negative was that, "My God, this book is like it's like a slasher movie." not that bad. No, not you. You didn't say that.
No, but, I know. I did. I'm like, who? How do you get?
Not a slasher movie, but they said, well, it's very, very bloody. Well, yes, it was, and it was back
then.
The
West. Yeah.
That's the way things were.
My mom came back. I actually dedicated this book to my mom. I said, for always making sure I had a book in my hand, because she did. But I dedicated it to her. So, of course, I sent her a copy right away. And you know, so she reads the book a day. And I called her that night and I said, so, what do you think? And she goes, well, it was a little violent. I went, what? I mean, it's a rough world. It's going to be that way. I know there's some stuff that happens. But, you know, I don't graphically describe it because I'm never going to do that.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I'm
right.
just not, that's, I don't want to do that, but yeah, I didn't really think that she would pick up on that or even notice it or
right.
think that. So sorry, yeah. Right. PG 13. There you go.
Right. Yes. Yeah, sending your book to mom is kind of rough too, because
my mother had my very first book. Well, she died, but she clung onto that thing like grim death. She would not. My brother wanted to read it. She goes, "No, this is mine. You want? Ask your brother."
I sent my mom Reservations, and she reads it. And she goes, "Boy, there's a lot of gunfights and shootings and people dying." And I'm like, "He's an FBI agent trying to hunt down a killer, Mom."
That's what happens. I sent my mom my first one, the one that I had on the flash drive when it was public, and. I remember when I was writing, and I don't know if we talked about this last time. I remember writing going, okay, I got to have a sex scene. Okay, it's not going to be too graphic because my mom's going to be reading this, and I just don't know that I can handle that.
We did talk about that, yes.
Yeah, and I sent it to her, and I said, what do you think? And she goes, about what? And I said, well, about the sex scene. And she said, is that all you got? I went, oh, geez. So I wrapped it up the next book.
Let's get our last commercial out of the way, and then we got a couple more questions to ask you. We're running out of time, so we'll be right back. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio, but right now we have a brief message from Creative Edge Publicity. Okay, you've written a book. Now, how are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They are going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book. But they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, radio, podcasts, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. Why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity today at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com.
Creative Edge, it's your word, it's your work, and it's your brand. Why trust it to anyone else?
Okay, and we are back with our guest for this evening, Mr. David Kettlehake, and we're talking about his book, Black, and actually we've been talking about other stuff right now. All right, David, this is the question that always we ask every author, and you probably remember from the last time you were on.
Maybe, it's a little the fuzzy, but go ahead.
Writer's block. Do you ever get it? And if you do, how do you get out of it?
I am very fortunate in that I don't suffer from it a lot. But what I do, well, that's weird. What I do is, like, for White, when I started that, I had an idea how I wanted to start it, but I didn't do it. I just really, for about a week and a half or two, I just kind of kept running it, different scenarios through my mind. And what the first chapter ended up really was completely different from that first aha moment that I really had. But if I do really run into any problems, if I'm stuck, it's the weirdest thing. I go for a run and I just put some music in and I go for a run. And for some reason, I don't know if it's that everything else is just blocked out. I'm only worried about not getting hit by a car, and I'm just going down the road. And that really serves to clear my head out. And honestly, if that doesn't do it, sometimes it's just serendipity. I mean, sometimes I'll just stumble into something and go, holy crap, that's perfect. You know, a magazine I see on a doctor's office table, a song that comes on. I get a lot of inspiration from music. So I'm fortunate that I don't suffer it a lot. And I'm also fortunate that I've been able to figure out kind of how to get out of it if I'm in that rut. But I was actually writing two books at one time, which I never thought I could do. Have you done that, Jim?
I'm doing it now.
Oh yes, it's not horrible.
No,
it's actually kind of fun once in a while.
Yeah, to switch books if you get stuck.
You do. That's one of the things.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm tired of this one for a little bit. I'm gonna just kind of pop over and work on this one for a while.
Well, yeah. I did it with Last Lonely Trail. When I did my chapters, I sent them to Jim, and I picked up When the Gods Fell and started on it until he sent his chapters back. And, you know, just kind of pinked my hand in a way. That kind of helps because it gets you a little bit of a break, and you come back and you start fresh again.
Right.
Yeah.
I will tell you that the only way to write a book with someone else is to make sure that you go through what they've written before you start writing your stuff, because that way you maintain your flow.
Yeah.
Nobody knows where our breaks were. Nobody.
That's
nobody
perfect.
Can find them.
And nobody knows what chapters we wrote.
You know, we know because we wrote the book, but they don't.
Well, I'm not sure how. I'm really not sure. I mean, I'm a big fan of sci-fi stuff and like The Expanse. And if you've ever read The Expanse novels, you know it's James S. A. Corey, but it's actually two people that wrote all those books. And I find that extremely intriguing to work that way with somebody, because I've always just done it by myself.
So. Well, it's not frustrating at all. I mean, you know, they write what they're going to write and send it to you, and then I go through it and then call them and say, David, we don't, or not David, Richard, we don't use words like smoke wagon or Haas.
I used Haas. I never used smoke wagon.
And, it's a smoke wagon, a real word.
And the town law were marshals, not sheriffs.
Yeah.
Counties were sheriffs, not marshals. So it's just, you know, doing little switches like that. But for the most part, when I was done with my chapters, you know, I'd send them back to Richard, and before you know it, we had like a book done.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's a good book. We have nothing, great reviews on it.
That's great. Now I'm going to have to go read it.
Oh yeah,
I want to do this with my daughter at some point. She's a writer also, and I'd love to write a chapter, send it to her, and then she writes one, and you know, back and forth and back and forth. And we kind of swore that we would do this blindly, just to see what came from all this sort of fun experiment. It could be a horrible, disastrous Frankenstein of an experiment by the time it's over, but.
Yeah.
It's something that we might want to still try.
Hey, I wrote one with my 10-year-old grandson.
Nice.
Now, granted, I did most of the writing, but we sat down, we talked about what we wanted to do, because he's into like Egyptian mummies and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'll work in what you've got into this basic story frame I had. And, you know, we've gotten two out. We're supposed to be six. Maybe we'll get to the other four sometime before the century runs out. I don't know, but we'll give it a shot. But it's a lot of fun to work with the kids and the grandkids on this stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know, we had one of our not frequent guests, but guests has been on a couple, two, three times. She's New York Times, blah, 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 blah. Tosca Lee. I don't know if you know the name.
Tosca.
She writes, almost in a Harry Potterish type fantasy, only more adult.
Mm-hmm.
But her phrase to us was, here's my advice to you guys. Write drunk, edit sober.
Okay. You can't see this, and I don't want to really throw anybody off, but can you see that
sign? Oh, my God, there it is.
There? Oh, there you go.
Sober.
And my daughter gets
six,
that.
The six words that every writer knows. Don't That's right. give up your day job.
I can't. Much as I'd love to, I don't think I can survive.
We are out of time, Rich.
Pizza. Yeah.
We're out of time. We're out of time. I really hate to do this because it's been such fun having you with us again, David.
I've had a great time.
His books are Gray and Black. And they are available on Amazon and all the online booksellers, or probably right from his website. And if you want to tell our audience where they can find you so they can go find your books.
Sure. Thanks. If you just go to davidkettlehake.com, that's just my website, David, like you think, kettle, like a pot, and HAKE.com. And my books are there, and there's just links on there to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and the rest. And if you get lucky, sometimes Barnes & Noble will have them in stock as well, too. So never
know. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a hoot again. And
always
and, is. Oh, when you're done with White, man, you got to come back.
Yes.
I would love to. I would absolutely love to put me down for this time next year, because that way I have a a deadline.
Well, you know, you got to go through the bookie. That's part of the rules. But
I do. I do have to go through the bookie.
Because she yells at me if I don't do that.
We'll put in a good word.
I'm going to say, David, put all three in one big box, have a box set.
That's what I really plan on doing. And I can picture it right now. The Firebrand Trilogy. Boom.
There you go. Okay. We got to go. Thank you so much for joining us again. I know it's late there. But for Richard, myself, Bobby Jean, who couldn't be here. And of course, the owner of LA Talk Radio and our fine engineer, Mr. Sam Hassan. And for the bookie, without whom, which we would not have this show. And we are out of here. Don't go away.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.